This Friday, March 19th, 2:04, Arthur Eggers teaching the class, and we're studying in Nahum chapter 2. Last week we talked about Nahum's prophecy was concerning Nineveh. Nineveh, as we said, was a picture or a type of the national powers in the end time and God's destruction to work on them. Jonah was a type of the Jew that will spread the gospel in the end time to the national powers. But there's going to be a destruction of the powers, just like there was of Nineveh. Come time, God's timing, that he destroyed them. And so in chapter 2, we read, "He that dasheth in pieces is come up before thy face. Keep the munition, watch the way. Make thy loins strong, fortify thy power mightily." The one who dashes in pieces is this confederacy of nations. And in the time it was written, in Nahum's time, it was a confederacy of the Medes, the Persians, and Babylon. They all came together, and when they came to Nineveh, they showed no mercy upon Nineveh whatsoever. Well, the fact that Nineveh never showed mercy. Nineveh was the headquarters of the Assyrian government. And when they conquered, they showed no mercy. So why should the ones that conquered them show any mercy? So when the word here used for dash means to hammer, to beat in pieces like a potter's vessel. In Jeremiah 23, verse 29, Jeremiah says this, "Is not my word like as a fire, saith the Lord, and like a hammer that breaketh the rocks in pieces?" And Babylon is called a battle axe in Jeremiah 51, 20 through 22. I'll let you read that. They were God's hammer. They were God's axe. And there was to be nothing left of the city. The battle would be contact on one-on-one, face-to-face. And in our lesson, there are four things named. And I consider these irony types of words telling them to prepare for attack. But it will not do any good. He says to guard your equipment. Watch the road coming into the city. Gird your loins. Fortify the city. Or in other words, make sure the walls are strong in the city. And in verse 2, "For the Lord hath turned away the excellency of Jacob as the excellency of Israel. For the emptiers have emptied them out and marred their vine branches." In the Lord's work, even though he uses man to do it, he's the one that gets things accomplished. His purpose is to turn away, or let's say hold back, the excellency of Jacob. Now we say, what is the excellency? What is this? Well, the word means that which is excellent, or that which is lifted up. And it's used in a good sense, and it's also used in a bad sense in the scriptures. Good if it's toward God, and bad if it's toward the flesh. And this would be pride, and used 20 times in the scripture. Also, pomp is a good word for that, used 5 times. When good, it's also translated majesty. Jacob and Israel, and this is speaking of after the tribulation when all 10 tribes will be judged. The word Jacob is used only concerning Judah or Jerusalem usually, but they wouldn't be emptied out for another 100 years. Then the 10 tribes that hadn't borne any fruit since Jeroboam will be the first to go. In Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 10, we read, "For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe unto him that is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him." So the separation of the tribes weakened the nation of Israel, to when Israel fell, Judah wasn't there to help. Up till the separation, there was 12 tribes that fought in unison with each other, against the enemy. But not so after they split up. So they were weakened. Then in verse 3, "The shield of his mighty men is made red. The valiant men are in scarlet. The chariots shall be with flaming torches in the days of his preparation. And the fir tree shall be terribly shaken." Now, Nineveh had skilled men that really knew how to act in combat, and they knew how to drive chariots, especially in night battles, as we read of the flaming torches or the light in this. Well, this wasn't any match for the Medes and the Babylon, because they had better chariots and more horsemen. The read of the fir tree here probably speaks of the spears made from the fir tree. And this is the way the Revised Version reads. As a fir tree, it reads as spears. And it seemed like that would be the best translation too. In verse 4, the chariots shall rage in the street. They shall jostle one another in the broadway. They shall seem like torches. They shall run like lightning. Now, some have said this was the modern-day automobiles jostling one another in the streets, and everybody has to admit that they're doing that. But I don't think this is what we're talking about. This cannot be the subject, because our subject here is war equipment, not pleasure equipment. I think what we're talking about is the closeness and how close these were together. You take chariots running wheel to wheel, had more power than if they were 10 foot apart. And so it seemed like the closeness of these chariots as they ran to and fro, one to another. And the power of the Medes and the Babylon people were too fast and too powerful for the warriors of Nineveh. I think this could be a picture of the nations against nations in the last days. Because Jeremiah makes this statement concerning the same time in Jeremiah 46:9, in his words against Egypt, is what we're talking about here. He says, "Come up, you horses, and rage, you chariots, and let the mighty men come forth, the Ethiopians and the Libyans that handle the shields, and the Lydian that handle and bend the bow." How great these were, but they weren't great enough. In verse 5, read, "And he shall recount his worthies, they shall stumble in their walk, they shall make haste to their wall thereof, and the defense shall be prepared." Some say that the king awoke to know of the attack, and he remembered how powerful he was, and then he went to war. But while God would cause them to stumble in the street, they would hurry to defend the city, but things would go from bad to worse for them, and there wasn't much saving of anything. "The defense shall be prepared. The gates of the river shall be open. The palace shall be dissolved. God overtakes all resistance." It's God's war. And the armies were there 3 years, we read in history, and could not prevail. History describes the end of the siege. And it says, rain came, the rivers were swollen, overflowed, and broke down the walls, allowing the enemy to enter. Now that's just the power of God, you see, not the power of an army. When God gets ready to change things, he does what he wants to. In Daniel, we read that he raises up kingdoms and he brings kingdoms down. And man don't have anything to say about it. No matter how strong or how wise they think they are, they cannot overcome the power of God. When God gets ready to do something, he does it. God uses a nation. In fact, he uses Syria against the 10 tribes. And when God's time, then he destroyed the tool that he used to whip his children. When he got through with Babylon, then he destroyed Babylon when after it was over. So no matter what, God's going to have his way in these things. Then verse 7, "And Huzzab shall be led away captive. She shall be brought up, and her maids shall lead her as with the voice of doves, tabering upon their breast." Huzzab, could also be translated, and it is decree. It is decreed. She shall lay bare, decreed by God. God is the one that's doing it. And I believe the thought of this verse is the city, used in a feminine gender, as we have here most of the time it is taken captive in a shameful moaning like a dove. the sound of a dove, lamenting that all is gone, and there's no hope for them at all. Verse 8, but Nineveh is old like a pool of water, yet they shall flee away. Stand, stand, shall they cry, but none shall look back like a pool. The thought of this pool is a stagnant pool, or corrupt pool. That's a kind of, not a refreshing pool. And the armies will flee as the leaders call them to stand. They won't stand. And over again, they get the command to stand, but they'll be like water gates broken. The city was like a pool of water. The Assyrian army deserted and ran, not looking back. History tells us that. Verse 9, take ye the spoil of silver, take the spoil of gold, for there is none end of the store and glory out of all the pleasant furniture. She is empty and void and waste, and the heart melteth, and the knees smite together, and much pain is in the loins, and the faces of them all gather blackness. So I think this speaks for itself. All is taken, the spoil, all her riches are gone, and there's only three words here to describe her: empty, void, and waste. Don't need any more. No hope, full of fear. I think the knees smite together. You're awfully fearful when your knees smite together. Reminds me of the first time I preached a sermon. I think mine did that. But this shows the fear that they had, and the much pain and sickness. Changes her whole countenance. You read there. All is gone, empty to the uttermost. The faces of all them, blackness. Shows a deadness and no hope whatsoever. Verse 11, where is the dwelling of the loins and the feeding place of the young lions? Where the lions, even the old lion, walketh, and the lions whelp, and none made them afraid. Let's read 12 with it. The lion did tear in pieces enough for his whelp, and strangled for his lionesses, and filled his hole with prey, and his den with raven. And here I think we describe the powerful killers. Where are the powerful killers that walk with no fear? The enemy was hungry for blood. They were ferocious people with no regard for life except for their own. Now we see that thought today among the same nation today. I look up the news and we can see that the people have no regard for life except for their own. They don't mind killing little babies and children over there. They only think of their own life. And so these little ones, the whelps, never went to the kill, but stayed in the den. So the thought is the spoils were taken home. How many people were torn in pieces to give their children? Or how many women were slain so that their wives could have their dainties, the little things that they like? I think of the experience that they had in Iraq. And the leaders of the country, they had everything, didn't they? They had nice palaces, beautiful furniture, and their wives had everything that they could possibly want, while others were going hungry and starving. This is the same attitude. It's an ungodly attitude, and God's going to judge it. Then in verse 13, it said, behold, I am against thee, saith the Lord of hosts, and I will burn her chariots in the smoke. And the sword shall devour the young lion, and I will cut off the prey from the earth, and the voice of thy messengers shall no more be heard. When God is against somebody, then they're up against it. Who can be against us when God is for us? We read in Romans 8. Anyone that designates your destruction when God goes against them, there's no hope for them. And it was the Lord that will get credit for all victories. At this time, it'll be him. Man won't have anything to do with it whatsoever. After all their war equipment is destroyed, they will have nothing to boast in, nothing of their own. the voice of thy messengers, we read. It speaks of the announcing of their great victories of the past and all the spoils they had taken from other nations in the past and the many people they had slain in order to get all these spoils. They'll be boasting in these things, but it won't be heard anymore because it'll all now gonna be gone and the king will be dead. Who is the king of the nations in the last days? Satan, yes, using the Antichrist, the false prophet. We'll have a triune Godhead then that'll be come down and be destroyed, and there'll be no hope for him